Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, we've been asking for a while, how is President Obama going to focus his campaign? Is it going to be entirely on just destroying Mitt Romney? And for the most part, that seems to be the case. But, you know, what's he planning to do? What's his goal for another 4 years if he gets it? And the only clues we seem to have come from fundraising speeches like the one out in California where he said that his plan is working. Haven't heard that line again. Not a big surprise there. But just last night, he was at another fundraiser, this time in Connecticut. I'm not sure if this was the fundraiser where they closed all the beaches around Harvey Weinstein's house or not, but he had so many fundraisers. Who can keep track? Anyway, here's what the president has to say about the tax plan of Mitt Romney, which he says is a tax hike on the middle class. Here we go.
He'd ask the middle class to pay more in taxes so that he could give another $250,000 tax cut to people making more than $3 million a year. It's like Robin Hood in reverse. It's Romney Hood.
I love all the huge fat cat liberal millionaires booing at, you know, that the Romney tax plan there. But then the very next line after that, the crowd cheered the president for calling it Romney Hood. He says, that's the choice in this election. That's why I'm running for a second term as president. Because he doesn't like Romney's plan? No, because raising taxes on the rich is the only idea that he has. And that, of course, means huge tax hikes on small business owners. If that's all he's running on, Jim, that's a pretty flimsy platform. And my guess is that the rest of what he wants to do, he's not willing to actually mention.
Walter Mondale all over again, Greg. a couple interesting things here. The first is, obviously, the assessment of Romney raising taxes in the middle class to provide tax cuts to the rich comes from the assessment by the former Obama economic advisor, now working for Brookings. That would be the nonpartisan assessment that Obama keeps citing. The argument from the Romney folks is this, you know, the way they take care of that is they don't count like half of Romney's tax plan. So, gee, you know, you pick here, you pick there, and unsurprisingly, you'll get that. You point out pretty well that Obama has not been very big on what America gets with a second term of Obama, although I'm sure lots of listeners are saying, oh, we know what we get if Obama's reelected. What's the second term agenda? What big changes will we see? Because really, otherwise, the Obama argument is the status quo. Keep things the way they are. It can't get any better than this, which I think an assessment I think many Americans would dispute right now. So basically, it comes down to everything we have now, except with higher taxes on the rich. And will that work? Gee, you know, I mean, I suppose there are some folks who might be just so filled with seething disdain for rich people, including apparently all those, you know, all those poor folks at the fundraiser there on the Connecticut beaches, you know, at Weinstein's house. But beyond that, that's kind of it. It's basically, you know, it's the same America we see today, 8% unemployment, only half of the Keystone Pipeline being built. So I guess we're going to move through the rest of the Bucket Brigade and things like that, except with higher tax rates. And, you know, a lot of us think that if you raise taxes on the rich, it's not going to do much to stimulate the economy or create jobs or create innovation or anything like that. Periodically on Twitter, you'll encounter folks who very much honestly believe that the problem with the economy is that the tax rates are too low. Tax increases create economic growth. Now, these folks are actually disagreeing with President Obama, who said in early 2009, when the country's in recession, the last thing you want to do is raise taxes. Well, technically, the economic growth numbers may be above zero, meaning we're not in recession, but they keep saying the term stall speed. And the fact that, you know, unemployment rate is 8.3%. Our economy is bouncing along the bottom. We are limping along, and Obama wants to raise taxes. Look, you know, there's been some frustration with the way Mitt Romney's running the campaign, but boy, oh boy, you know, this is the stage is set for Republicans. If you can't win an argument against tax increases, then you really deserve to lose. It's all there for you, Romney and his running mate and his team. Go out and hit that ball as hard as you can, because this is what the future of the country is coming down to, and Obama's almost making it easy for you if you, you know, seize the day, as they say.
As we move on to martini number two now, Jim, you've covered politics for a while. I have too, and we're certainly students of political history. And if you look back over time, what made the big difference in presidential elections? Usually it's the economy, especially if it's really bad or if it's really good. We heard it's the economy stupid in 1992. Obviously, national security is a big factor in 2004. as far as I know, the lineup of convention speakers has never been the determining factor in a convention, but you wouldn't have known that yesterday by the first batch of names that the RNC threw out there as speakers in primetime slots. Condoleezza Rice, Susana Martinez, Rick Scott, we've heard more today, Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, and so forth. So the conservatives were a little bit worried about some of the names that were thrown out there yesterday, that not enough conservatives were added to the list. I think that'll change over time, and I'm guessing this is not going to be a rhino fest, Jim, but just all the hand-wringing over the intra-party machinations here a couple weeks ahead of the convention seems like a lot of wasted energy.
What? This person got this slot, but I didn't get that slot. That definitely doesn't look very good. A couple of those names on there, I'm not surprised. I'd be surprised that anybody is surprised, i.e. Rick Scott, the governor of Florida. Yeah, the governor of the state that's hosting the convention is going to get a Jeb Bush, well, he's the former governor of the state that's hosting the convention and probably one of the most popular Republicans in the state of Florida. By no means is it an announcement of the restoration of the Bush dynasty or anything like that. Most of them seem like good picks. I don't understand why you say Rhino Fest with like Susana Martinez and Nikki Haley. Really? You know, I mean, Rand Paul, really? This is considered a Rhino Fest? Look, every 4 years, the parties kind of struggle about what is the purpose of your political convention. It used to be the pick nominee. Now, over time, it turned into kind of a televised pageant for the party. Now it gets televised, at least on the major networks, less and less. But it's still sort of a opportunity for a national sales pitch. And oh, by the way, to kind of woo the 15,000 members of the media who will be in attendance at that. So you're trying to showcase your most appealing speakers and your rising stars. You can probably count on one hand the number of convention speakers who have really made a big impact for good or for ill. Undoubtedly, Barack Obama did himself a lot of good with his 2004 convention speech, but that really, in the end, didn't help Terry and Edwards very much on Election Day 2004. I think maybe you could argue Pat Buchanan's cultural war speech back in 1992. Some might argue that hurt the party back then. Looking kind of flipping through it, most convention speeches are very, very forgettable. And there's nothing, it's just kind of baked to the cake. So the idea that we should be losing any kind of sleep over who's speaking when and who got the bigger slot and who's in prime time and who's in before, most years there are two speeches that matter, the running mate speech and the nominee speech. Some years you'll get some really exemplary performance from somebody else that'll kind of announce them as a rising star. It'll be interesting to see what keep your eyes open, whether Christie gets to do that, whether Marco Rubio gets to do that. One other thing, just quick note on the discussion of the convention speaker schedule. I've heard a lot of folks say, if so-and-so is on the speaker schedule, this means that they're not going to be Romney's running mate. Well, Palin was listed as a scheduled speaker for the 2008 convention. So while it's not likely that anybody who's been mentioned so far is going to be speaking, is going to be Romney's running mate, by no means. If Romney decides Susana Martinez is it, then she's going to be picked, and they'll just find somebody else to fill that slot in the convention. So I'm kind of surprised to see everybody kind of jumping to that conclusion over this.
Yeah, possibly so. A couple of thoughts that jump into mind. First of all, I don't think John McCain knew when he first threw out the schedule that it was going to be Palin. He was probably still pushing for Joe Lieberman at that point until he got talked out of it. And it's interesting that you mentioned how what is considered to be a great speech doesn't necessarily help the nominee. I remember the media absolutely falling all over themselves, loving Mario Cuomo's keynote address in 1984. 49 states for President Reagan that year. So that obviously doesn't make a huge difference in the final tally in the election. On to Martini number three now. And this is just a mere coincidence, Jim. There's no political connection to this whatsoever. Here's what we're hearing from the Los Angeles Times. The Justice Department is investigating whether Las Vegas Sands Corporation, owned by high-profile Republican donor Sheldon Adelson, broke federal law by failing to report millions of dollars of potentially laundered money transferred to its casinos by two high-rolling Las Vegas gamblers, and they're citing the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles is investigating deposits made in the mid-2000s by a Mexican pharmaceutical businessman later indicted for drug trafficking in 2007 and a California executive with Fry's Electronics who later pleaded guilty to taking illegal kickbacks, according to the newspaper. Well, if anyone would know what Mexican drug cartels have been up to, it is the Justice Department. And so Jim, it just seems a little too convenient that the man who has promised limitless funds for Mitt Romney through super PACs and so forth is now in the crosshairs of the Justice Department.
Yeah, and I think a story like this kind of illustrates that we've gotten to where it's very hard to give the Justice Department the benefit of the doubt on this sort of thing. Look, you know, you and I don't know Sheldon Adelson. You know, could there be something emitting an odor there? I suppose it's theoretically possible. But for a for an announcement to leak of an investigation right after this guy comes out as one of the most preeminent funders of Republican campaigns and opposition to the president, just doesn't look. It's not like, you know, it's not like Eric Holder has such a sterling record in every other matter that we can say, oh, you know, he would never do such a thing like this. Sad to say, there are a lot of arguments. We've seen a great deal of politicization at the Justice Department. I went through and found out there are quite a few major Obama donors who are working in U.S. attorney positions. Now, it's the president's prerogative to appoint U.S. attorneys. It's the president's prerogative to fire U.S. attorneys. You just wish that you could say, oh, these are all fantastic career prosecutors with, you know, sterling records and sterling character, and they would never do something that's political. And it's one of those things where the idea that this, you know, this story could be floated this time of year and the Justice Department would not think anybody would start thinking along these lines, just not being realistic. We, you know, that they've done a lot to put fuel to the fire of the cynicism of the public. And when you do that, this is the result.
Jim, have a fantastic day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.